to the ANews podcast. This is episode 34 for October 20th, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial: The Trouble with ANews. I was watching an interview with Trevor Noah this week, and he said a few things that sparked some thought. One of them was the importance of context for comedians, and, by implication, for all of us. Those who know me might laugh at that, because context is one of my favorite words. But I find it so important, partly because I have to struggle against my own capacity to act in that Western civ way of relying on abstractions and absolutes. Noah was talking about the idea that whenever people perform comedy, they moderate themselves so as to be understood properly, and that we develop that capacity not just in ourselves, but with groups of people, that we develop our audiences as much as they develop us, and as much as we develop ourselves. I'm sure he says it better than I just did. But the concept speaks a lot to the transition we're in with the internet. It has always been a possibility to be quoted out of context, but current technology makes that easier and easier with every passing minute. The idea of always only saying things that can be heard unambiguously by anyone is a modern phenomenon. We must be proclaiming our core beliefs at every moment to avoid being labeled as one of them. To bring this home, among other things that ANews has been criticized for, Anarchist News has always gotten shit for allowing / encouraging anonymous commentary. It's been easy for me over the years to reject that complaint as some kind of desire for a nice anarchy, for people to just be supportive of each other, to try to get people to abide by some standard of behavior that seems more likely when people know your name. Although frequently this criticism seems to come from the same people who can't stand the posts of the named posters on ANews, but that's a different train of thought. I have always valued the ability, the likelihood, that less popular perspectives are more likely to be aired when there is some deniability, and I still think that. But it is also true that posting things online is a way to dramatically change the context of our conversations, to open them up to bad faith readings, to spread shame. Ideally, we would take these anonymous comments and yank what is good from them, see our projects and perspectives with fresh eyes, maybe change our minds or the minds of others, but an entire culture seems to be heading in the direction instead of getting more and more rigid and constrained, acting more circumspectly and conservatively. I have said before that I think we are still at the beginning of the internet / online transition, and that we don't and can't know how it will shake out. This intense conservatism seems like one of the responses to being confronted with such major shifts in understanding and expectation. I guess at this point, I can only hope that we last long enough to get past that particular stage. What's new this week? The Poetry of Flames, the Arson Trials in France. From CrimeThink. This is mostly a compilation of pieces from the protests in 2016 that led to, among other things, a cop car being set on fire and the arrests for that event, to the daily reports of the trial, which happened late last month, September 2017, and the solidarity actions in response. Quote, another mainstream article, this time from Libération, explains that the entire offices of the gendarmerie were reduced to ashes, including the Criminal Investigation Department. Moreover, the wave of attacks mentioned in the arson communique echoes the arson of 5 police vehicles in Limoges on Tuesday, September 19, 2017, a few hours before the opening of the trial. In the same article, we learn that local authorities noticed that, lately, numerous anonymous arsonist actions and communiques were posted on independent media platforms such as Indie Media. According to the journalist, that reveals a special use of arson among some radicals, especially against, quote, necrotechnologies. Arson against a mobile phone antenna in Ardèche last July, arson of Enedis vehicles and offices in Grenoble last May, and the Department of Drone last June. Enedis, or ERDF, is the company that controls and manages the electrical network in France, or against social control, like the arson of CCAS vehicles in Grenoble last March, unquote.
Voting in hashtag Catalonia, an anarchist glance on the Catalan referendum from Athens. From Enough is Enough at enoughisenough14.org. This is the clearest statement yet about the referendum situation in Spain, and aside from providing some brief but useful history of the area, it's a We Told You So statement. Quote, we stood in solidarity with the struggle of Catalan protesters when they encircled the Catalan parliament, while the Catalan middle right-wing party was in power in 2011, forcing the politicians to enter the parliament by helicopters in order to vote for the austerity budget. We stood in solidarity with anarchists when the Catalan police participated in the anti-terrorist raids of Operation Pandora or cracked down on our comrades who were striking to hold on in the Can Vies squad. However, solidarity grows on and results from common visions. Otherwise, it is reduced to mere expression of sympathy, and in this case, the dispute, the vision, is Catalan independence as a demand and pursuit by the Catalan bourgeoisie. Unquote.
Pyotr Ryabov, anarchist philosopher imprisoned for 6 days in Belarus, declares a hunger strike. From avtonomen.org, quote, 11th of October, City Court of Baranovichi, Belarus sentenced Russian anarchist Pyotr Ryabov, anarchist philosopher, lecturer of Department of Philosophy in Moscow State Pedagogical University, was sentenced to 6 days of prison for small hooliganism and distribution of extremist materials. Court considered Belarusian anarchist journal Svoboda Ili Shmert No. 6, published in 2007, as extremist material. However, these were trumped-up charges. The real reason of the arrest was his lecture on anarchist movement, for which Ryabov came to Baranovichi. Ryabov was arrested on his way back to Moscow in the Baranovichi train station. He was supposed to talk in another event in Moscow. After this sentence, Ryabov declared a hunger strike, unquote.
Verdict handed down as solidarity actions grow for Kara Wilde from itsgoingdown.org. This is mostly a compilation of the actions that have happened since the arrest, some for all the arrestees, most for both Kara and Krem. Some of the communiques are funnier than others. Quote, in the night of September 18, 2017, we, as former gendarme, collectively decided to burn 3 wagons and 2 buses from the gendarmerie in the Jordan compound in Limoges, unquote.
What's new with LBC Fall of 2017 from littleblackcart.com? This quarterly newsletter announces 2 new books. The first one is The Last of the Circus Animals by political prisoner Sean Swain and Travis Washington. 2017 is the 10-year anniversary of this prison publication that has been circulating that whole time. The special publication features 3 introductions from people who have been touched by what was originally in 3 pamphlets. The second quarterly book is Brethren of the Coast, an inspiring, depressing, and touching book newly translated from the French about the experiences and context of Somali people who are sometimes pirates and sometimes coast defenders and sometimes both.
You go no further, Canada, from Montreal Counter Info at montrealcounter-info.org. Quote, the year 2017 marks Canada's attempts to celebrate the past 150 years of its existence. These efforts include the state trying to position Indigenous peoples within this distorted narrative of nation-building founded upon stolen land, attempted genocide, and assimilation. In the face of this ongoing colonial nightmare, we see only one way forward, decolonization and the end of Canada. Unquote.
Spanish state, no state will make us free, from Insurrection News. This is a translation of a leaflet handed out in Spain by Contra Madrid. It's mostly significant to anarchists for being, among other things, anti-democracy. Quote, democracy, parliamentary institutions, and politicians do not look after our interests, but their own interests. No one but ourselves should look after our interests. Electing our masters, voting, submitting to majorities and or minorities, acting within democratic frameworks, makes us complicit in our own domination and establishes in us the spirit of delegation and officials. We put our lives in their hands. Relying on politicians who only seek, as they all do, to profit from our struggles and our feelings while submitting us or aspiring to submit us makes us become a servile mass ready to mobilize or demobilize according to their electoral interests and their struggles for power. Unquote.
Kurdish-speaking anarchist forum calls for pressure against Iraq assault from freedomnews.org.uk. A Kurdish-speaking anarchist group called KAF has released this request for support following an assault on Kirkuk and other places by the Iraqi government. Quote, Iraqi Kurdistan has been going through a very difficult time since October 2015. The wages of public sector employees have been reduced to less than a half. The number of unemployment has increased sharply. The price of everything has gone up. Business and the government services have dramatically been cut off. This all happened in addition to the war with ISIS and disputes between KRG and the central government over the budget and the disputed lands and city like Kirkuk and the others. So many strikes, demonstrations, and boycotting work during this couple of years took place. Some of them lasted for a few weeks, even months. KRG, instead of resolving all these problems, tried to divert the attention of people from the real problems by announcing in July the referendum of independent Kurdistan, state of Kurdistan, on the 25th of September, unquote.
Concerning the juridical situation of our comrade Marcelo Villarroel, Sepulveda, or How State's Revenge Perpetuates Itself in Silence, translated by Tormentas de Fogo, I think this is a call out for actions to reject the state's treatment of a prisoner sentenced for, among other things, being in a terrorist organization and committing an explosive act against a Spanish embassy. Quote, our call is to get rid of the verbiage and the false gestures of solidarity, to face this and each of the revenge that come from the state as a constant policy against all those who do not deny their ties and convictions. It's time to act, to realize that no comrade in prison is alone. For the destruction of all prisons, unquote.
Media. New book release, The Politics of Attack, Communiques and Insurrectionary Violence, published by Manchester University Press. Quote, in the social war being waged by insurrectionary anarchists, small acts of violence are announced and contextualized through written communiques, which are posted online, translated, and circulated globally. This book offers the first contemporary history of these post-millennial, digitally mediated, insurrectionary anarchist networks and seeks to locate this tendency within anti-state struggles from the past. Through an examination of thousands of movement documents, this book presents the discourse offered by clandestine, urban guerrillas fighting capitalism, the state, and the omnipresent forces of violence and coercion. Unquote. This seems like a textbook example of the academy infringing on anarchist theory and practice. Do you see what I did there? Kill the professor inside your head.
Book extract, Deep Ecology and Anarchism, from freedomnow.org-uk. This is an extract from a book that will be released at the London Anarchist Book Fair on October 28th. Quote, a disaster afflicting today's world, which is at least as serious as any actual or potential environmental disaster, is the colossal toll of disease caused by bad or inadequate food. The malnutrition of poverty in the third world is no more drastic in its effects than the malnutrition of affluence in the rich sector. The malnutrition caused by excess of fatty, clogging, overflavored, and chemically processed foods causes the, quote, diseases of civilization, unquote, which are no less lethal than the diseases caused by destitution and dirt, unquote.
Podcast, Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, Episode 5, October 2017, 1 hour and 15 minutes. This remains a sweet and sometimes interesting compilation by international audio projects. The politics and the rhetoric will, of course, vary. This project is looking to branch out to various languages, but for now, it's all in English. First section this time is news from Athens and includes actions as well as legal updates. Then the final straw talks about Herman Bell. More on this later in the A-News podcast. Then brief news from Sweden, a check-in from Chile on the Mapuche, a section from London. This is on whether the Russian Revolution should be celebrated, which seems embarrassingly stereotypical for the London anarchist scene. And finally, an update on the G20 from Hamburg.
Hotwire number 9, Puerto Rico, J20 trials, and Raqqa, 34 minutes. This show demonstrates what some might call the bipolar attitude of Crime Think, which offers both some thoughtful, experienced, and nuanced perspectives on the world, and a bunch of bumper sticker, knee-jerk leftist headlines. But obviously, I am not the target audience, so that's fine. This episode includes shallow perspectives on prison labor, aka prison slavery. What does it mean when prisoners desperately want the slave jobs? And cop violence. Yes, we have to do for ourselves, and cops are violent. But even if cops weren't violent, we still don't want them. And what does doing for ourselves mean? For example, how do we keep from becoming cops ourselves? Perhaps the thinking is that people will come for the simplicity and stay for the nuance? Or perhaps it merely reflects different people's input. Obviously, Crime Think's marketing is the best in anarchy land, so they probably shouldn't listen to me. This episode also has an interview about DIY relief efforts in Puerto Rico and the role of politicians in disasters, and updates in the J20 case.
Anarchy Radio, October 17, 2017. An hour. Cliff co-hosts, fires and the toxins released from burning of residences, radiation levels in Sweden from Chernobyl, starving penguin babies, oil rig explosion, mass shootings, lack of volunteers for a historic Christmas parade, quoting Scientific American about extended adolescence, anxiety rising, pictures of nature said to have a soporific effect on prisoners, language is very old and the oldest known symbolic activity. Putin says that artificial intelligence is the future of humanity. Quantum computers as a commentary on that, and people not understanding the answers provided by these computers. The audience of this project seems to be those who don't already know that the Western project is failing. Maybe the real audience is people who already agree with Jay-Z, but who are surrounded by those who don't. A little dose of, you are right, things are really this bad. Cliff is always a nice addition, even if only in his capacity to actually talk about an idea versus reading off depressing lists and simplistically mocking people who disagree with him.
The Final Straw Radio, support Herman Bell and discussion on the Signal app, 1 hour and 7 minutes. For the past month or so, Black Panther Herman Bell has been in anarchist news for getting unusual levels of harassment by prison officials. This episode of The Final Straw features an interview with Bell's daughter-in-law. Sean starts at about 7:20. Here, Sean defends political violence and some of the consequences of his standing by that perspective, especially while in prison. Per usual, Sean is both right on and quite funny. Unicorn poop is mentioned, as is the home information for the Ohio Assistant Attorney General, who could apparently use some anarchist attention. The Ross interview starts in 15 minutes. The conversation about the Signal app starts at 35 minutes and goes into more specifics than made sense to me, but that's not hard to do.
For your Radical Radio audiobooks, The Last Messiah by Peter Zapfa. 25 minutes. Zapfa has been making the rounds in certain circles as a voice for a pessimism that is not often acknowledged, much less validated. A pessimism that is frequently alluded to, but only as something to fight against, rather than as one of the clear responses to a world that becomes daily less and less recognizable to the lives of humans and other people. This episode of Free Radical Radio is introduced by the editor of Elpis, who says, quote, "For Zapfa, the cosmic panic he saw endemic to the capacity for meaning-making burdened his species with a perpetual psychic scramble to avoid absorption into the infinite regression which undergirds that capacity. For anarchists, the whole of the world as it is faces them with similarly unthinkable problems whose sheer magnitude, complexity, or both render them as in fact meaningless by dint of scopes in excess of the capacity for a given brain to cognize them, terminating thought into impermeably blank anagnorisis. Having achieved a state of no mind, only those with suitable religious inclinations bother remaining here for long." Unquote.
The Final Straw Radio, IWW Organizing Relief in Sonoma County. 36 minutes. This is a mini episode featuring, quote, "a conversation with Emilio of the currently unofficial Sonoma County IWW, or Industrial Workers of the World. This chapter doesn't yet have an official charter, but they were in the process of organizing one when the fires in Northern California started last week, and they have used this as a platform for fundraising and trying to work out solidarity relief in Santa Rosa, the seat of Sonoma County." Unquote. Of the week, principles versus outcomes. Are anarchists too hung up on defining, elaborating, and enforcing anarchist principles, rather than focusing on what successfully accomplishes the outcomes they hope to achieve? Consider an example that occurred during the heyday of Occupy, in which a working group emerged that proposed electing two delegates from each state in the continental U.S. to send to Philadelphia on the 4th of July for the National Convergence, with the expressed goal of publicly petitioning for a redress of grievances. That constitutional convention is a process outlined in the U.S. Constitution that provides an opportunity to counter-hijack the system to use its own merits to destroy it, but the Central Occupy group opposed it. In the last few topic of the weeks on this website, many words have been exchanged regarding what anarchism is or isn't, what every anarchist should or mustn't do, about which perspectives and priorities are most important and which are morally repulsive.
Even critical perspectives focus on the principles every anarchist needs to have, quote unquote, rather than the process or criteria by which we might evaluate whether those principles are any good. As suggested in one thoughtful post, the answer to covert intellectual leadership is for everyone to develop the ability to think critically and formulate their own ideas. Every anarchist needs to be able to suspend judgment and consider whether the facts fit several possible narratives, to interpret and understand other points of view on a deep level, to be able to conceptualize and process sensory information from multiple points of view at once, to perfect the art of thinking structurally instead of morally about social problems and their causes, e.g. radical criminology, to tell the difference between a latent common sense belief they haven't questioned and an id poll or other politician telling them what their real motives or real significance is. But is thinking critically enough? By what criteria should we evaluate whether our ideas are any good? How do we measure success? How can we tell whether what we're doing is furthering our goals versus enforcing narratives about what anarchism means, about what it is and it isn't, and about who is or who is not worthy of the title?
I kind of agree with the thrust of this, but I'm not sure it matters. This seems to be, I guess, in the family of the thing it's trying to criticize, which is to say that a lot of anarchists spend a lot of time arguing about what anarchism is.
Yes.
And what does that matter? I mean, this is, I guess, one of the reasons why I'm really sympathetic to people who sort of say, I've left anarchism behind or I've moved past it. Because we weren't doing enough, or there wasn't enough, like, there. And this feels like that. And frankly, the discussion in particular, the comment thread, was exactly that. It was just, like, the point isn't to call yourself an anarchist, you know, brush off your hands and go take a nap because you've done such an exhausting thing. I guess the political point to an anarchism that doesn't have a really tight definition along the lines of red anarchism is that it's a framework in which the rest of your life is lived. It itself is not the life that you're living.
Okay. Sure. I'll buy that. I mean, I do appreciate just nodding towards, you know, critical perspectives and processing information or having criteria by which you judge the things in the world, being thoughtful about your anarchy and how you get to where you are. But I, for the most part, find the discussion about what is and who is or is not anarchist generally not interesting. And I certainly have my own opinions about the disappointment I find in many anarchists and their politics and how I feel like fundamentally they're, that they're not anarchists or whatever, but it's not actually something that I generally talk about. And when I am in a room full of anarchists, it's not the more interesting. There's nothing interesting about having those conversations. So it's a recurring theme that I find really frustrating. I don't know. I feel a little overwhelmed by the question, I think.
Yeah, it's especially strange given the example that they spent a lot of time on and that we didn't actually read.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Occupy was not an anarchist group organization, and especially when it made overtures to becoming a national thing. Like, there was just nothing. Like, it's just not the same conversation as far as I'm concerned at all. So I'm not sure what they were trying to accomplish with that part of the question. I mean, I guess if we were going to focus on what successfully accomplishes the outcomes they hope to achieve, you know, this is perhaps the more interesting part of the conversation, which is to say that, you know, as I've gotten older, I am attempting to accomplish specific things. You know, right now I'm in the process of attempting to write a book. That's absolutely a specific thing that I'm trying to accomplish. And it's by and large a solitary act. I mostly need other people to know that I'm doing it just so that they stay out of my way. And it's limited in that construction.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we were to talk about anarchism, you know, being the ideology of attempting to change the world in a libertarian direction,
mm-hmm.
well, frankly, to focus on that seems absurd, you know, because to focus on that either means that you're going to make some Nietzschean arguments, right, that you become this universal soldier,
right,
or it means that you accept this very, very small definition of what the kind of social change that you desire in a libertarian direction would be. This is why people fall into the trap of single issues like pot legalization or something else. And it just seems to me like an outcome-driven anarchism is a not just a political anarchism, but in general, it's where one becomes, by and large, an anarcho-liberal or a revolutionary robot. And so, the question, I guess, would be, what would a focus on accomplishing outcomes look like that wasn't like that? I can't see it in the modern context. And, you know, perhaps that's my limitation. And this is why, you know, for me, anarchism has a lot more to do with how it is that I live my daily life and would like to live my daily life in a more expansive sense. In other words, it doesn't have that sort of really big picture vision that this dreams of having. And it's definitely why I don't respond to that all that positively when these kinds of accusations get thrown around that basically say that you're not an anarchist unless you're, you know, two arms for the revolution.
I think there's a false binary in the question. Are anarchists too hung up on defining, elaborating, and enforcing anarchist principles rather than focusing on what successfully accomplishes the outcomes they hope to achieve? I think many anarchists are doing both of those at the same time, or all of that at the same time, I guess I will say. And I do think it's a worthwhile project to not be so hung up on the definition of what you're of anarchist principles, but elaborating on them. I guess for me, there's a relationship there between that and thinking critically about these things. But I don't know. Yeah, I think when you become campaign focused, the very nature of that focus means that you lose the ability to
speak to the principles part more.
And enforcing anarchist principles.
What are the anarchist principles you think are worth defining, elaborating, and enforcing, or not?
I think that I have a list of anarchist principles that are fundamental for me that are worthwhile.
What are three of them? Top three.
No state, no capitalism.
How is that a principle?
All right, well, maybe it's not. I'm thinking of principles in terms of what defines your anarchy.
Yeah, but that's not a principle necessarily.
Sure. Okay.
Remember Lawrence's response to this was always along the lines of mutual aid, solidarity.
Right.
Freedom of association.
Not quite. The freedom of association, for sure. And I guess really probably mutual aid, although I don't think that I would use that word, but that's probably that's probably close enough.
You perhaps wouldn't be as promiscuous with it as the term implies.
Probably. And it's definitely not exclusively an anarchist principle, but as I have gotten older, the notion of acting in good faith has become incredibly important to me. And I want that to be in everything that I do that's important to me and all of the people around me who are engaging in a thing that's important to me.
What's the secular definition of that? Because the problem with
probably
the term, right?
Something about character.
Oof. Okay.
I'm not sure.
There's something in there for me about transparency.
Sure.
This is, I think, something that's a central post-left tenet that a lot of anarchist groups nowadays are really not on board with. Which is a clear sense of transparency.
Yeah. So I'm happy to define my principles. I'm happy to elaborate my principles. I'm happy to talk about them. Obviously, I'm going to turn around and walk away when you start to put things in terms of enforcement. I don't even know what that means.
It tends to mean splits.
It does tend to mean splits. But I don't think that that's entirely true. I do think that there are people who believe that they are holding some kind of line. They are some kind of enforcing body for anarchists based on a single issue or a set of issues. And if you don't comply, they believe they have the right, the authority, to enforce some kind of consequence for that. Which that's just Christianity. I don't care what you call it. And sometimes I feel like that is the outcome that people hope to achieve. Is, you know, basically there's a fundamental to their politics is some kind of anarchist purity.
Well,
and that's what's going to
make us win.
This is why anarchism has fallen lockstep behind call-out culture and, you know, the no-platforming stuff. Has been all of that's fruit of the same tree.
Yeah.
The idea that there's a right and a wrong way to be in the world, to live, to act, to behave, to think.
Yeah.
And who better to enforce it than the people who fully understand what that means?
Yeah. And I grew up in the Midwest in a small town and not that far from the Bible Belt. And being an anarchist was everything was not that, was all of not that and that, because that's what I grew up with. And so I'm grumpy at people who are trying to make my anarchy have to be that or put me on the outside of anarchy because I'm not that.
I do think that this question, you know, what is anarchism, is one that very much speaks to a certain point in the life of an anarchist. I feel like it's perhaps something that you do after you've completed the introductory assignments and before you're ready for the upper division stuff. I think it, you know,
this is like level 200 classes.
Yeah, it's the level 200 classes. What is anarchism? And, you know, where you do lots of existential navel gazing or nasal gazing, as the case may be.
And
because I feel like when I'm doing the work I'm trying to do right now, you know, it doesn't look like the answer to these questions.
No.
Although, that said, it is worth mentioning that more than ever, and perhaps this is just because of notoriety, I'm being asked by others the question.
Mm-hmm.
Or I've been accused of not being an anarchist more recently than I have in the past. Except, actually, you know, that's not the case. I think that back in the days when I was more involved in the red versus green fights, or the sort of like, where I would argue with more first wave anarchists than I do today, they would often sort of say that basically if you don't conform to what it is that we say, you're not an anarchist. Whereas today, the attenuation that you have to consider me to be not an anarchist because of being antisocial compared to their social solutions, I think that that's actually a smaller fight than the fights from in the past in the 90s.
I guess I feel like I don't know if I ever identified as a post-left anarchist, but my association with that tendency, I feel like that was probably the time when I was the most directly told I wasn't an anarchist. And now I'm definitely being told that, but it's from this very, you know, far away and kind of broad, like, you know, throwing things at the side of the barn, and I just happen to be in the barn. But I don't care. I mean, I care, but I don't care.
Sure.
So
thank you very much for this conversation.
Thanks.
The Weekly Anarchy 101 Question and Some Answers. In this segment, we take questions and some of the answers and responses from the website anarchy101.org, a user-moderated Q&A site for anarchists to answer questions on anarchist thought and activity. Most questions on the site have a lot of commentary that we don't read, but is certainly at least half the fun. The question this week is, can anarchists who join others' actions separate themselves from those who planned the event? Specifically, actions organized by Black people for calls for social justice are almost always planned to be nonviolent and non-destructive. Anarchists/Black Bloc have attended the actions and done property destruction. The original callers are then discredited. Can anarchists speak out to be sure that their participation was not part of the planned action? They tend to attach themselves to it, but the originators get the blame. So anarchists who act out in ways not consistent with originators maybe could create their own actions calling for social justice separate from somebody else's plans. Or if they use that same time and place, they can be sure they are known to be different from the originators. Learn how to cooperate without ending up dominating the planning. I know no individual speaks for a group or other individual, but I think the intrusion into carefully planned actions is unfair. I would not see it as a very live and let live, as I imagine anarchy is supposed to be. Thank you for your input. First answer. I'm going to take a stab at an answer, though I think all the comments are as good as what I will write, and anyone reading this should read all the discussion related to this question. To start with the assertion that actions organized by Black folks are almost always nonviolent, non-destructive, is a canard. Most actions, by which I am talking about demonstrations, protests, etc., as opposed to, say, living and acting in a capitalist world wherein violence is inherent and mostly invisible, taken by anyone, are nonviolent, non-destructive. I have rarely attended a demo that was explicitly like, we're going to go fuck up the cops and smash as much shit as we can. Even the WTO protests in Seattle used coded language and property destruction slash fighting back against the cops was seen by many participants as hijacking the event. One reason anarchists use events others have organized as a jumping off point is that if anarchists just called for their own thing, detached from a larger mass, it would be immediately kettled, contained, and marginalized. I also want to challenge the language of, quote, social justice. It is common language, and I feel like it lumps anarchists' goals, politics, whatever, in with a much broader progressive left agenda that I have nothing to do with, personally. When people talk about social justice, they are mostly talking about compromising with the state in ways that might be necessary, but are not ever where this anarchist wants to set his sights. That doesn't mean that we anarchists should just show up to any old thing with the intent of doing smashy. Nor do I mean to imply that breaking shit is even the most effective tactic we have available. Assuming that anarchists will attack, and that we will attack the things we hate, windows, cops, newspaper boxes, etc., some strategy is important. Specifics are going to vary, but things I have seen that have been more or less effective have included specifically calling for a section of the demo, part of the town designated as a red zone, meaning shit's going to get conflictual, calls for breakaway marches, look for the black flags if you want to get rowdy, meet up and mask up, or just straight up taking over marches that are seemingly losing steam or not tapping the anger and rage of the crowd fully. Regarding planning, anarchists have been involved in larger planning of actions. Most often it isn't us, anarchists, who dominate the conversation, but liberals who seek meager reforms, or alternatively, socialists, trots most often, who seek inroads to political power. There is nothing to be gained from working with any of these folks on an organizing basis. Our politics and agenda will always be too extreme. That doesn't mean I don't sometimes show up to actions that I know are going to be super liberal vanilla. It means I don't pretend that these are my people or that I want to have a thing to do with them on a more than episodic basis. I want to end by going back to the part of your question that focuses on organizers being blamed for anarchist actions. First, this assumes the organizers aren't anarchists, not always the case in my experience. While it also seems to imply that we should not act if it potentially tarnishes others. This is an impossible standard to meet unless you want to see us only hold signs and march in orderly circles at a time and place determined by the state. How a protest is portrayed by the media and the state is simply out of our control and is always going to be framed in terms of either threat or nuisance. An associate wrote a whole master's degree thesis on this. I'll see if I can convince them to get it on this site and address some of that. Next answer. I haven't read and adjusted everything on this page, but this question evokes something in me that I want to get out. I know you're aware that not everyone is on board with the ideology of nonviolence, and a lot of my answer is going to focus on that, so this might not be very helpful to you, but it is an authentic anarchist response. Can they? Well, sure, it's possible for anarchists to do any of the three things you suggested. Will they or should they? No, they won't, and I don't think they have any moral obligation to, and I also don't think you need to be concerned about anarchist violence, quote, delegitimizing your protest. Maybe that's because I think moral obligation is limiting and contrary to the goals of my anarchism, or maybe it's because my general disdain for the cult of nonviolence and how it sublimates the rebellious energies of anger and frustration into something that doesn't challenge or transgress authority in any meaningful way, and instead becomes part of the supporting apparatus of the state. It's probably both, if I'm honest with myself. Nonviolent protest is, quote, legitimate because the state legitimizes it. It isn't disruptive to the status quo. It's a safety valve that the state is happy to sanction. So what if your protests are delegitimized by anarchist or non-anarchist violence? The powers that be weren't going to acquiesce to your demands, because why should they? And it's not going to affect some kind of sea change in public opinion on the matter unless there's massive police brutality at your legitimate protest to evoke sympathy, which there won't be. The state learned from the civil rights struggles in the 60s. Because no one sees a placard on the news and thinks to themselves, oh damn, thousands of people disagree with me. I need to change my opinion. Now that we have mass communication, you can always find a forum in which your existing ideas and attitudes are affirmed. Nonviolent protest without an external implicit threat of violence is only good for one thing, making you feel like you've done your bit and that you're part of something bigger than yourself. I'm pretty young, but I've witnessed a lot of nonviolent protests lead to nothing. When the country I live in decided to join the U.S. in its invasion of Iraq, millions of people took to the streets with placards and loudspeakers and chanting and all that stuff. But the government participated in the invasion of Iraq nonetheless and was returned to power at the next election. I've also been to protests where anarchists and police agent provocateurs committed violence against property and nothing changed. I'm not saying that anarchist violence or protest is particularly effective either. The only protests that I've seen amount to any real change were the London riots of 2012, which started as nonviolent protests over a police shooting of a black man, quickly escalated to violent but explicitly political protests, and then turned into a citywide riot. When it was all over, the government quietly pressured the police into curtailing their racial profiling and stop and search policies. I just want to emphasize that contrary to your assertion that black protests for social justice are turned violent by non-black people, the London riots were planned as peaceful protests by groups that were predominantly black and escalated into rioting by predominantly but not exclusively black youth. The point here being that in the one case I've seen protesting change anything at all, it wasn't because the protests were peaceful and it wasn't because some anarchists crashed the party and smashed it up. It was because the state was pushed into a corner and understood that unless they addressed at least part of the source of the rage that led to widespread property destruction, it would happen again. The moral of that story is that political protest does not alter structures of power, but ontological rebellion, a rebellion of being and action rather than thought and speech, can. Of course, rebellions of thought and imagination are a necessary precursor to ontological rebellion, and ontological rebellion doesn't have to be violent. Just don't confuse marching and chanting expression with actually changing shit, doing. So, to conclude, I don't want to tell you how to feel. If you're angry that outsiders are crashing your protest, that's fine. I won't tell you that you shouldn't be angry. However, I do think there's no need to worry that they're making your protest less effective because it was never going to be effective. That's why it was allowed to take place. I also think it's worth thinking about how participating in the spectacle of sanctioned dissent may reinforce what you're trying to fight, and how you might try to fight what you're fighting by transgressing, transcending, or subverting it, rather than just expressing your opposition to it. Sorry if that came across as a bit ranty, but it's an emotive subject for me. Also, sorry if I came across as condescending. I don't intend it that way. I'm a work in progress. As always, if you don't like these answers or have a question of your own, join the conversation at anarchy101.org. This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel, narrated by Chisel and a friend. We thank Aragorn and a friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are at littleblackcart.com. News and up-to-the-minute commentary are at anarchistnews.org.